The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. There was an article last week in The Sun about Bon Secours Hospital. Bon Secours Hospital is asking the state for $5 million under the threat that they may have to close their doors. And Bon Secours Hospital, of course, serves some of the neediest in our community. Most of their income comes from Medicare and Medicaid, which pays less than insurance companies. And a huge portion of the people who see them at Bon Secours, it's the only medical care they can get, and they have no insurance. It is a hospital with a venerated history. Before it was Liberty Medical Center, and they bought that out. It was Provident Hospital, which was the African-American hospital doing segregation here in Baltimore. Many great venerated doctors worked there, took care of people mostly in need, and it has a history, deeply rooted history, in this community. But it's deeper than that deeply rooted history. We're talking about where the future of healthcare is going. Bon Secours Hospital, an example of that in our city of Baltimore, is only an example. It's emblematic of what's happening to inner-city hospitals across the United States of America, to rural hospitals across the United States of America, to hospitals that serve Latinos and Native Americans and poor people in general. They are in danger of closing everywhere, just as the White House begins to debate the future of health care. Before we introduce our guests and launch into this discussion with all of you at 410-319-8888 to join us, I'm going to tell you a couple of statistics. That $1 trillion a year is spent on healthcare in America. That's 15% of our gross domestic product. What shocked me to find out the other night as I was looking at this issue was that if things continue the way they're continuing now, in 10 years, the cost of healthcare will be 37 times that amount of money. $37 trillion we could spend on healthcare in America, and not very good healthcare all the time. And of that dollar we spend, 30% goes to administrative costs for most insurance companies. Only 1% of that to profits, I should add, but 30% to administrative costs. Half of that money is spent on hospitals and doctors. Some people say that's out of control. 50 million people are without health care insurance. The study I read last night said that that could jump to 65 million people within the next 2 years or more. And America's running into a crisis. And how does it get solved? We're going to talk about how we might approach that, and we'll use the example of what's happening to the poorest among us, the uninsured, the underinsured, and to the hospitals that serve them. We're joined in studio by Jeff Singer, who's Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless, who takes care of the people who are not taken care of anywhere else, of the leftovers, as some people might call them, but I don't consider them that at all, but we look at them that way sometimes. They're building a new healthcare center. They just got $1 million in federal funds. In this latest stimulus package to finish their health center, which is really important for all of us in the city. Dr. Alan Noonan is with us in the studio. He's an MD, PhD, and Dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy. And joining us by phone is Dr. Samuel Ross, who is CEO of Bon Secours Hospital in Baltimore. And Jeff Singer, Alan Noonan, Samuel Ross, welcome. Good to have three of you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Ross. I know it was last minute, and I do appreciate you being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And all of you, because all of you are last minute, and we do appreciate you coming in here to talk about this. So you heard how I laid this out. So I'd like to hear from your perspectives what that means. I mean, first of all, let me ask you this, Dr. Ross. If what is the situation? Did Bon Secours get the $5
million? Yes, I got a call earlier today from Senator Verna Jones, and that budget amendment was passed today, so we look forward to receiving that $5 million. We also got $770,000 for some capital renovations.
But now that is just really a plug in the dike.
You're exactly right. That's a one-year commitment only. Gives us some time to try to reconfigure, work with the state, particularly Secretary of Health Comers and others, to really find a longer plan solution to the challenges here in West Baltimore.
Let me ask our two guests here in the studio and then come back to Dr. Ross, Dr. Alan Noonan and Jeff Singer, to talk about what, to you, this is emblematic of and what's going on here in Baltimore, America. I mean, the Bon Secours Hospital, who serves the poorest among us in West Baltimore, is in danger of closing. Even with your brand-new health center, Jeff Singer, you couldn't fill all that gap.
No, not hardly.
Not hardly. So let me start, if I might, with Alan Noonan from the Morgan School of Public Health.
Well, to me, this looks like Baltimore's example of what has been going on in healthcare, hospital care in this country for a long time. The public hospitals started to close 25 years ago, and that has just swept across the country. That public hospitals are closed.
Define a public hospital for our listeners.
A publicly funded hospital that provided care to any and everybody who came in the door. As those hospitals were closed, no systems were really put into place to take care of the people who depended upon them. And I see this Bon Secours issue as that same issue that has happened in many cities around the country.
Jeff Singer?
So one angle on this problem is this is privatization's fruits. And for the last 25 years in the United States, we've been privatizing all sorts of public services, from public housing, which is rapidly disappearing and being replaced by housing vouchers, which go to private landlords, and therefore the stock of public housing is gone. Public schools are becoming, you know, privatized and charter schools, and the public hospitals are gone as well. So it's a national phenomenon, and it's more than just health care.
So, is this a trend? Do you think this analysis is correct? We've just kind of touched the surface of Samuel Ross, and if that's the case, then what happens to hospitals like Bon Secours?
Well, I mean, this is a problem. I was at a public hospital. I was at Parkland Health and Hospital System in Dallas for 15 years prior to my arrival here about 2.5 years ago, and the challenges do exist. In Maryland, there is no such institution as a public hospital. You know, we are an all-payer state under the Health Services Cost Review Commission, and there is a formula that we all have to live under that's really about acute care services and what they call regulated health care services on our campuses. So we're performing a public hospital function without public hospital support, and many inner-city community hospitals find themselves in this same situation.
So, who pays for a public hospital? Federal government paid for a public hospital, state and local. Who paid for the hospital you worked in Dallas?
Well, it's a combination. We were county funded now, but that's only about 40%. There was an $850 million budget. Only 40% of that was county funded, and the rest we had to make up just like every other hospital: Medicare, Medicaid, commercial, self pay. And then there was also money from disproportionate share and upper payment limits, which are primarily Medicaid programs.
So, I mean, if we're looking at what happens to places like Bon Secours Hospital, maybe those of you out there who are in the healthcare industry, who are physicians, who are nurses, who are patients, maybe many of you who listen to this program use Bon Secours Hospital as a place to get your healthcare. Why don't you join us at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation with your own experience. And there are many people fighting for a just healthcare system in America. Many of you also listen here at 410-319-8888 and come and join us with your thoughts about where this should take us. So what is the solution here? Let's talk about what the larger framework is here. And what do you do so Bon Secours don't close? Do they become public hospitals instead of privately owned? Is there another way to manage and run these institutions? Before we get into the cost factor, let's start there.
Well, I think on Bon Secours...
Samuel Ross.
For Bon Secours is part of a national system. And our national system has subsidized Baltimore over the last 10 years to the tune of about $75 million. So it has been performing that function, serving this community, and with that commitment to do so. In today's current market and how it's impacting all of our local systems, the ability for our system to sustain this is really what brought about the challenges that required me to reach out to the state. But the real solution is that we got to find a better way to begin to change health. The health indicators for West Baltimore, in spite of having a hospital for all these years, are some of the worst in the state, some of the worst in the country, around diabetes, around heart disease, around cancer. A newborn in West Baltimore, some statistics that came out of the health department in 2008 in the RAND study, was that a newborn in West Baltimore had a 20-year less life expectancy than one in Roland Park. So we've got some serious health issues here that we have to get on the front end of that require primary care, prevention, and other social services that are wraparound services that are really about the overall health.
Well, let's explore that a minute. That's part of your area, Alan Noonan.
I agree wholeheartedly with Dr. Ross. I look at this as a health equity issue. We're trying to, our goal should be to keep all people as healthy as possible. And in order to do that, we need primary health care, which is provided by physicians, nurses, et cetera, in offices, provided by hospitals. We also need mental health care. We need hospital health care. We need preventive health care, which this country has done a very poor job on. If you look at the figures, only about 1 to 2 pennies out of every dollar in health care goes towards prevention. And we need social services to be integrated. So all of those are specific factors in health care that do function somewhat separately, but also need to be interrelated.
Jeff, and I'm going to open the phones here and pursue this a little further.
The situation of people experiencing homelessness, which is citywide, of course, and nationwide, is even more dramatic than Dr. Ross's data. Homeless folks die at rates 3 to 10 times as high as the housed population. The life expectancy of homeless folks in the United States is about 44 years. For the rest of the population, it's approaching 80 years. So it's absolutely right that people don't have access to the services they need, but included in those services is access to housing, for example. And the housing situation in West Baltimore, is the housing situation in Baltimore in general, is part of what drives the poor health of folks in Baltimore.
Let me open the phones here, and I'm going to kind of push this envelope a tad further. We're talking about preventative health and where our health care dollars are spent and how they're spent and how you control that. But first, 410-319-8888, your thoughts. And James in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, James. You're on the air.
I believe the same circumstances that are occurring, it's like time, it's a thing that happened with
Go ahead, James. I'm sorry. There's a little feedback on the line, but we can hear you.
Oh, okay then.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
The same circumstances that happened. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
The same circumstances that happened, I think, about like 20 years ago with Lutheran Hospital.
James, is your radio on? Could you turn your radio down?
Okay.
Or off?
Hello? Can you hear me now?
That's better. Go ahead.
All right. Same circumstance that happened at Lutheran Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's repeating itself. It's like the same thing is happening with this hospital right here, Barnes & Kemp. If you remember, before we was in...
James, I'm really sorry you're breaking up. Maybe you can try to call back in a better line. I do apologize.
Okay, All right,
thank you. But what he was saying was that about Lutheran Hospital closing, another one, hospital closing in this town that served a similar population. So is part of the problem, part of the issue you have to address is healthcare costs inside hospitals and reimbursements. Now, that's a real, like a third rail of this discussion, one of the many third rails of this discussion, but clearly it is one of the third rails. There's so many third rails, I don't know where you can be electrocuting kind of die in this discussion, but it clearly is one of the third rails. That every hospital, and I'll let Dr. Ross kind of comment first, every hospital wants... all the latest equipment, all the latest procedures, and all that costs a great deal of money for each hospital to spend. And companies who make that stuff want to sell it, so it's bought by hospitals, and there's a whole world there that's part of it. And the other part of it is that when hospitals are reimbursed, and I'm not trying to make the hospitals be the bad guy, because there are a lot of layers to this, and I'm trying to get to all of them. The part of the hospital layer is that hospitals are reimbursed by volume of services they give patients, not by a specific service. So often operational things are pushed that aren't always necessary. I think the study came out from Harvard was that over half of all operations in America may be unnecessary. So how do we wrap our hands around that, and what part does this play in it? And not necessarily just the Bon Secours, Dr. Ross, because, I mean, I think it's in the larger system of the wealthier hospitals where this takes place more than the Bon Secours, but that affects the cost. Dr. Ross?
Well, it definitely does, but, you know, the system, the old saying is the system is designed to get the results, you know, that you see. We have a system that's built on, as you indicated, volume, and is built on inpatient volume. And so in order for hospitals to even get a margin and be able to do more on the primary care and the prevention side, they have to make sure they maintain the volume. The other challenges are the expenses around nursing. We have a nursing shortage, so you have a lot of contract labor, which drives up your costs. We have contract labor in other areas as well. We have physician subsidy. Physicians say, well, it is extremely difficult for me to make a living based on the reimbursements from Medicare, Medicaid, and even commercial. So if you want me to practice and take care of the patients, then I need a subsidy. So we're having mounting expenses, you know, appropriately so in many situations, but the reimbursement is not keeping up with that. So we have to come up with a methodology that says, where do we really want to invest for our future? If we keep investing in the current model, then all we're doing is sick care. We need to move to a model that has been described in other articles as well care or prevention. And so we just have to acknowledge that and be willing to take those bold steps. And that's what we were proposing as we talked to the legislature and to the regulatory bodies this year is, okay, we all agree that that's the best way to go. Then let's invest in that as opposed to continuing to invest in sick care.
So, Dr. Alan Noonan, how do we get to that place?
Well, again, I agree. This is a planning issue as far as I can see. And we've tried in the past 20 years or so to keep it so that every hospital didn't buy a million-dollar piece of equipment that it couldn't afford. And we have not been successful in that attempt. So now the hospitals are paying the bill for the costs that they've already undertaken. So coordinating healthcare with a prevention perspective is very important. But when you look at the healthcare system, as it were, in this country, the prevention people do not have the power that the people with the treatment people do. So you don't get as much attention, you don't get as much support, you don't get as much money for prevention as you do for treatment. Most of the money on healthcare is spent in the last couple of days of a person's life.
Jeff, do you want to add to this?
I do, actually. Fundamentally, I think we think the problem is that healthcare isn't understood either as a right or as a public utility, such as education. Martin Scorsese a few years ago made this film called The Gangs of New York, and, you know, maybe it wasn't a very great film, but it had a really wonderful part, which was this house caught on fire, and these fire departments, which were all private, came to the fire and competed to put it out, and they wouldn't put it out until the homeowner gave them
money,
right? We treat healthcare the same way. We figured out that fires shouldn't work that way, and we should have public fire departments. We figured that out about 100 years ago. We figured out around the same time that education is too important to be left simply to the market. Now, there is a market in education, but nonetheless, we guarantee basic education to everyone. And when we guarantee basic health care to everyone, and we as a community then plan that health care and fund that health care, I think until we do that, we won't really solve this health care problem.
So, again, the number is 410-319-8888. Join us for your thoughts. A couple people called in. I'll get right to your calls when you call back at 410-319-8888. As we look at the future of Bon Secours Hospital in our community here, and also the future of health care in Baltimore, especially as regards the poorest among us, the uninsured, those with Medicaid and Medicare, and what happens to the hospitals to serve them. 410-319-8888. Could be in your community in Prince George's County. Could be happening in Howard County. Could be happening anywhere. It is happening across America. As we sit with Jeff Singer, Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless, Dr. Alan Noonan, Dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy, and Dr. Samuel Ross, CEO of Bon Secours Hospital. So, going back where we left off, I mean, I did shows a few years ago over the years around hospitals, and I remember one show we did with Union Memorial Hospital. And part of the battle there was, A, that helicopter pad that they wanted to put in Union Memorial. People were fighting against, saying, why do we need it there? Isn't shock trauma enough? And we don't have to have helicopter pads in every hospital. But meanwhile, hospitals like Union Memorial and others all want cardiac care units for that surgery because that's where the money is. That's where the big money funnels in. So, I mean, it's going to call, it seems to me, for some kind of radical restructuring of how healthcare is delivered and what hospitals do if this is going to work. I mean, we talked about doctors and salaries. I have a lot of friends who are primary care physicians. Mm-hmm. And most of them are pretty happy. And they make a decent living. They make what, more than most people in America, $175, maybe $250 a year. We're talking $100,000. Mm-hmm. Now, to somebody who was hanging around with Mr. Madoff, that might not be a lot of money. But to most of us, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So people can live a decent life. So who's driving this? And how do you change the direction of the way it's going? That's what I'm curious about. How do we put our hands around it? Does Bonser Horse become a public hospital? Or become, pardon me, Dr. Ross is really not aspersion, but become like the poor boy in a hospital chain? I mean, how do you change that?
Well, that's where we're going to have the courage of our convictions. There's been talk about this for, you know, decades, as each of you has indicated. But when do we reach the point where we turn our talk into action? We know that it's going to require disruption of what currently exists in order to make this different. Your point is very well taken. We have to begin to rationalize healthcare services because we have avoided the issue of is it a right, you know, or is it a privilege? We do implicit rationing. We do that because we don't have enough capacity. So our emergency room's overcrowded. You wait long enough. If you can walk out, you walk out. You don't get seen. So we do it in our clinics. We do it in our hospitals. And we're not serving people's healthcare needs. So we need a forum with the leaders, people who are in decision-making positions, to sit down and say, this is not acceptable for Maryland. It's not acceptable for Baltimore. And how do we do it in a way that becomes a model that's replicable for the nation? We got some of the greatest minds in the country. Mm-hmm. We got Johns Hopkins. We got University of Maryland. We got all the other community hospitals with leaders. And we got schools of public health, et cetera. There's no reason that we couldn't sit down as a city, as a state, and come up with a solution that could redirect funds to create this system that we're talking about.
Alan Newman?
My take on this is that action in this country is done by the people, not so much by the thinkers or the people with titles. We need to persuade the population that it's not in their best interest to have a hospital on every corner with a helicopter pad and an MRI piece of equipment. And that takes a lot of education, and it takes education not only from those of us with big-time degrees, but also we need to convince our community partners what works in their community is what's best for them. So we need to build that partnership.
Yes, we agree. That's a really good point. In fact, there's a piece of legislation that I think can serve as a vehicle for this community education. Congressman John Conyers from Detroit has introduced for the last several years a bill in Congress, H.R. 676, the Healthcare for All Act. It creates a Medicare program for everyone, for all of us, and it eliminates private insurance. And sorry to our friends in private insurance, but I think they can all do something more useful than sell private insurance. And because it eliminates private insurance and the costs of administering private insurance in healthcare centers like ours and in hospitals, everyone can have the same high-quality health care without spending a penny more than we currently spend. It's a wonderful bill. We've been supporting it and educating people around it for some time now. There's a lot more that needs to be done. We're not talking to everyone that needs to hear this story.
Oh, I mean, but right now in Congress, they're having a hard enough time putting a public health care plan in the middle of health care reform. Let alone single-payer. They can't even get that piece through because it seems to threaten private insurance companies and others, because they'll have to compete against the government, who can do things maybe more, sounds odd, more efficiently and cheaper than private companies. And even that piece of it's being, Alan Noon has stopped in Congress, it seems like. Maybe it won't be.
Well, I'm not sure how stopped it is, but there are some efforts going on to, for instance, the president is talking about everyone needing a medical home. He's talking about increasing coverage to all people up to age 25. And he realizes that we're the only industrialized country that does not have comprehensive health care for all of its people. So I think the efforts are beginning again, and they're difficult because of the power of the money. The money is where we've been talking about, in the hospitals, in the insurance companies, etc.
Yeah, we've talked about here at Bon Secours a community engagement process, which is what we've been talking to the state. And like I said, I have to give credit to Senator Verna Jones and Delegate Keith Haynes and others who really helped us to get this budget amendment through. But it wasn't just because they were trying to save a hospital. It was because they believed in the fact that we need to all focus on a more integrated model, which I agree with the other speakers. We have pieces to this puzzle. And a lot of people are invested only in their piece. Until there is a more integrated approach to all of these components to make these pieces of the puzzle into an actual picture, you know, we're going to continue to struggle with this. So what I see at local level, state level, federal level, people approaching it from one particular component. We've been doing that, again, for decades. We're going to have a broader stroke that does bring all community partners. And when I say community partners, it's at all levels. It's your grassroots people who are saying, we want better for ourselves, for our kids, our families, you know, and it is the politicians and it is the folks who have the money, because until we sit down together, we're not going to be able to achieve these solutions.
We're going to take a very short break. We're going to come back. I want to explore with all of you at 410-319-8888. I know we missed some of your calls, but get to them as soon as we come back from break. That what would happen if Bon Secours closed? What would happen to healthcare in Baltimore if there were all of a sudden was no longer a large hospital in West Baltimore serving mostly working class and poor African-American citizens of this community? What would happen? What are we willing to do about it? What should happen? 410-319-8888. Dr. Samuel Ross, the CEO of that hospital, Bon Secours. Dr. Alan Noonan is Dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy. Jeff Singer is Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless. And you are the patients and doctors. 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to MeCU.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Last week, the news reports were that Bon Secours Hospital might have to close. It was deeply in debt. It serves some of the poorest people in Baltimore City. It's not a common uncommon to the rest of the country. We're joined this hour by Dr. Samuel Ross, who is CEO of Bon Secours Baltimore. Dr. Alan Noonan, who is both a physician and a PhD, is Dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy. Jeff Singer is Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless. And you are here with us at 410-319-8888. I remind you, one of the stats in the paper was that Bon Secours Hospital, its uncompensated care equals 18% of its gross revenue. That's more than twice the state average. 18%. It's almost 20% of its gross revenue doesn't exist, in other words. And most of the rest of it comes from Medicare and Medicaid that reimburse at lower rates. But that's all involved in a hospital's role, as the street saying goes. So we have to talk about what that means. So what would happen? What would happen if Bon Secours closed its doors? What would be the effect on the people of the community of Baltimore? What would be the effect on health care in this community?
Well, I'll start off by
Alan Noonan
indicating that we've done some looking at this community and realized that it's a very needy community when it comes to health care and health services, and that Bon Secours has really targeted some of the greatest health problems for this kind of community with a heart health monitoring program, a renal dialysis program, a mental health program, and a drug abuse program. In addition to that, we're public health, so we're very excited about the fact that it has this a fitness and wellness center. So if you took away Bon Secours from this community, you would take away some very critical services and abilities to encourage people to do what's best for themselves. So I think it would have a really negative impact on the community.
And you're building a new health center. Bon Secours closes.
Significant impact. Many of your listeners have either read the book The Corner or seen the television program. The people who were the protagonists of that book got their health care at Bon Secours or health care for the homeless and nowhere else.
That's right.
We would clearly see more people, and we turn away people now. And even when we have a new facility, we'll be turning away people. And by the way, our uncompensated care is 70% of our patient mix. 70% of our clients have no health insurance.
So how do you keep your doors open?
Hat in hand, begging in the streets, Mark.
that's becoming the theme. This is Dr. Ross. You know, we do 24,000 emergency room visits a year.
24,000.
We have a 10-bed intensive care unit. You mentioned the chronic dialysis unit, which is one of the larger ones in the city. We have a large inpatient 32-bed psychiatric unit, mm-hmm. along with the large outpatient behavioral health component as well. So the impact would be tremendous. The system is not designed to take this load if we were forced to close. Like I say, the good news at this point, we've gotten the support from the state. We intend to continue to work on sustainability. But without a rational plan for how to provide access to these individuals, my biggest fear is people say, well, there are emergency rooms at Maryland General and
right.
University and St. Agnes and Sinai. That's an assumption, and my colleagues here, I'm sure, would tell you, we have to look at behavior. Just because those emergency rooms exist doesn't mean that patients are going to go to them. If this one closes and there's more of an inconvenience, the biggest fear is that a certain percentage of people won't seek care at all until they're in very late stages of heart disease and cancer and HIV and its ravages, et cetera. So we can't just assume that because there are other facilities, people are going to avail themselves of it. They've proven time and time again they do not behave that way.
Well, let's push further what it means to change hospital care in the state of Maryland. You're right. If Bon Secours closes, it goes first to Maryland General, further east on the west side, over by Howard Street. And there's St. Agnes, which is a different neighborhood. And that these are all in different places. This is why this. And we happened to go to Bon Secours just a few weeks ago by accident, because we had to stop in. And I realized that in that neighborhood, when we started going around that neighborhood, there's nothing else around, you know, on that far west side. What happens if Bon Secours closes? How do we ensure health care in our community? 410-319-8888. You often have the answer. Ida in West Baltimore, you're on the air.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, Ida, you're there.
There's a system for uninsured Baltimoreans in place right now. If you call 311, the emergency number for the police, you know, fire.
Right.
I did that over 60 days ago because I'm uninsured.
Ida, could you turn your radio down, please, so we can hear you better?
I'm on speaker. Should I get off the speaker?
Just turn the, if you turn the radio down, that'd be great. Thank you.
I did that.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyhow, I've been uninsured for years. So I called this 311 number over 60 days ago. They took all of my information, including my social security number. Promised me the information in 2 to 4 weeks. It's been 8 weeks or more. I haven't received anything. So, I mean, what does a person like me do?
Jeff Singer, why don't you jump in?
Sure. Ida, if you're a person with a low income, you're likely eligible for a...
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. Again, Ida, if you're a person with a low income, you're likely eligible for a primary care program where you can get the health care that you need. And the city was intending to help you apply for that program through an organization called Baltimore Healthcare Access. And if you could look them up in the phone book or call 411 and ask for Baltimore Healthcare Access, or you can call us at Healthcare for the Homeless and we'd be happy to get you connected to this primary adult care program where you might be able to get the help you need.
Any other suggestions for her, Samuel Ross?
Well, certainly if it's more emergent, again, go to some emergency room, and we all have financial assistance policies that are based on income and family size. The other thing out there, there are federally qualified health centers. I think Healthcare for the Homeless is a federally qualified health center, 330?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's one. But there are other places out there as well who will see you, you know, based upon income and family size. So look for those alternatives as well. But if it's the urgent or emergent, please go to our emergency room or somebody else's emergency room.
So, coming back to where we left on, Ida, thank you. I'm glad you got through. I hope that helps. But what you're saying to us is indicative of what part of the problem is in community, especially with uninsured people. That is a growing number of people in our community. But when you have powerhouses in the city and state, like Johns Hopkins Hospital System, and the University of Maryland Medical System, they do a great job. We've got them. We've got Mercy, that may be the next level down. These are really large, complex institutions that have tentacles everywhere. And then you've got private companies like yours, Dr. Ross, that you work for, Bon Secours. So what do we do to change the way it works, given the institutional models we have now? And when I say this, Dr. Ross, this is not an attack on Bon Secours at all, or the institution. I'm just saying that should hospitals is part of the problem, the corporatization of hospitals, where people buy hospital after hospital after hospital, whether it's a private institution like the ones that own Bon Secours, or whether it's a public quasi-public institution like the University of Maryland, or nonprofits like Johns Hopkins. But then they say, we have to buy these hospitals. The hospitals say, if they don't buy us, we can't survive. So talk about what alternative models might exist, and are they viable?
Well, I have
Alan Noonan.
One point that I'd like to bring. It's not exactly an alternative model, but one of the things that Morgan is doing is it has created a public health program. The purpose of the program is to train people from Baltimore about how to do healthcare management, policy, evaluation, et cetera, and go back to Baltimore so that you have the people from the community actually doing the work of planning and policy development in healthcare in a city like Baltimore. And that's a problem that is nationwide. The people who plan healthcare are not people who have really been affected by inadequate healthcare, and not people often who understand the best practices of healthcare in a poor community or a community of color.
I would agree with what Alan, this is Dr. Ross, what Alan is saying. You know, I support, and again, go back to what we talked about earlier about community engagement. You know, people have to be, first of all, self-empowered to begin to make a difference in their own care. So we have to start at that level. But they also need a voice. And so we have to support advocacy. Those of us who can advocate have to support advocacy. Healthcare for the Homeless does it. Alan's doing it through his work at Morgan State as well. And we need to continue to build, you know, this army of people. For those who've read the book, The Tipping Point, you know, it's how do we as a community get to that tipping point where we really have people saying we have to do a better job of taking care of our own, of truly taking care of the people. To your question earlier about the hospitals, you know, our system has recognized as we go forward that just buying hospitals or expanding existing hospitals, again, is not changing the health of the people. We're making profits in places where we have better payer mix, but are we really changing the status of health? And so there has to be a commitment, and with that commitment, it can't just be verbal. You know, the policies, the procedures, and therefore the reimbursement methodology has to come into play as we talk about medical homes and all of the elements that are about more significant patient care coordination.
Jeff, do you want to throw in here before we move on to the subject in this area?
Thank you, because I think what both of you have been saying is that this is grounded in the notion that health is a public service and health care should be a public utility rather than a center for making profits. It's also grounded in a fundamental idea of the United States, which is democracy. Who is it that should determine what sort of health services we get? Us. That's pretty simple and straightforward. That's what democracy is about. Healthcare for the Homeless, you know, has this little democratic principle internally in which all of our staff and our clients determine what kind of services we provide and how we provide them. And we'd like to disseminate that model to nonprofits everywhere. But the bigger, more fundamental issue here for Bon Secours and other hospitals and for our health system, such as it is that it isn't determined in a democratic way. It's determined by where you can make a profit.
So, but how does that change? I mean, what happens to Ida, our last caller from West Baltimore, who doesn't have insurance, who needs health care, needs primary health care? I mean, that's the issue. You have Bon Secours Hospital that has 20% of its people coming in with no insurance whatsoever. You say you have 70% coming into your facilities, Jeff Singer, with no health insurance at all.
70% of 12,000 different people that we saw last year.
70% of 12,000 people coming to health care for the homeless have no insurance.
Correct.
So how does Bon Secours and all the other hospitals provide primary care for people so we take care of our citizens? It's great to have the gym, the health fitness center, but you got to get people to the health fitness center and people to the doctors to take care of them so they can take advantage of a health care fitness center in the first place, Alan Noonan. Now, this is like your bailiwick, I think, is it not?
Well, I'm not sure it's my bailiwick.
In terms of your pursuit at the School of Public Health.
Well, I think one of the things that I tell our students is that public health and politics are not separate. And the way we determine how money is spent, at least government money, is politically. And even private money is politically. And we teach people that you've got to get the community behind you and get them to understand what works in their best interest and get them to make noise, which you often cannot do. It's often better for the lady who just called to say what is needed than for me with this degree and this title to say it.
And people have to, the problem is I think that there is such a lack of respect for poor people and working people in the United States of America and their ideas about what they need.
That's right.
They're always being told what they need, and they're being asked what they need is part of the problem we have here. So I'm curious, Dr. Ross, at Bon Secours, how many patients come through your doors a year?
We do. I mentioned the emergency room.
Right.
We have 24,000 through the emergency room. And we do about 600, between 600 and 650 inpatient admissions a month. So, you know, about 7,000, 7,200 inpatients a month.
And how many, and what about the status of primary health care delivery? And I know that many physicians I see, not all of them, many physicians I see are at Mercy. And so I see, and my primary health care doctor is at Mercy.
Right.
And all the doctors around there that I see for eye issues, my joints, whatever it is that's happening in the moment, are at mercy. So how does that work at Bon Secours?
Well, we have a small professional building next door where we have some private physicians, internal medicine, family medicine, and actually Total Health Care, which is a federally qualified health center, leases some space in that building as well. And they do, you know, pediatrics and internal medicine and family medicine. But the other point to your question is having these buildings and doctors is okay. But I think my colleagues would also agree that we have to be more effective in our outreach because, you know, that old movie, if you build it, what's that, Field of Dreams, if you build it,
they will come.
They will come.
They will come, right.
Well, that was a movie. and in reality, that's not how our people behave. So we have to be broad in our thinking, and every way, if it's mobile units, if it's outreach at the different places, you know, go where the homeless are. You know, don't.
But can I jump in here,
Alan Newman?
Another piece of being broad in our thinking is that healthcare is not only provided by physicians,
right?
Nurse practitioners,
right.
physicians
right.
assistants,
yes.
Other oral health, dental. And all of those people are very important in the health care of people, individuals, and communities.
So let me ask this question again. I'm coming back to what I'm actually trying to hone in on a point here if I can. I don't know if I can. Is that here you have Bon Secours, hospitals like Bon Secours. And in this case, it's owned by a large corporation. Whoever owns the hospital, that aside for the moment. So how does a hospital like Bon Secours, and can it, Dr. Ross, change its modality? In other words, can you need the crisis care you give, dialysis and mm-hmm. and for renal failure and things because it's the nature of
right.
the community you're serving, as well as drug addiction because it's the nature of the community that you're serving,
right.
mental health issues, people have no place else to go. But what would it take for a Bon Secours to be a primary health care center in the middle of a community that needs it?
It takes the partnerships that I think we all have been alluding to. For us, it's not so much that we have to build it from the ground up. There are resources that already exist. I mentioned, you know, the FQHCs. So how do we integrate the existing pieces more effectively and have them have greater impact in West Baltimore? But also, we got the same problem in East Baltimore.
Yes.
And I'm sure in Southeast and Northeast. Mm-hmm. So we need to start one location, bring the resources to bear, find the solutions that we're all talking about, make it happen, and then begin replicating it in the other parts of this city. And that's going to take a little bit of time and a whole lot of effort and a whole lot of financial resources. But they're already, they're just not allocated appropriately.
So, Jeff Singer and Alan, how do we get those allocations changed? How do you create a system where hospitals like Bon Secours or South Baltimore General or other, whatever, it's not called that anymore, is it? What is it called now?
Harbor.
Slide on into your mic there,
Harbor.
Jeff. Harbor. So how do you take those hospitals that serve communities that need primary care? I mean, I have a health insurance card. I have a private doctor. I can call my doctor and go, I need an appointment. I need to see you now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do not have that. So how do you turn institutions like this into institutions that serve the need and also survive as institutions? That's what I want to get to.
It depends on what you mean by survive as institutions. We mentioned earlier the Section 330, which is the money for community health centers, which I think Mr. Singer's been talking about. Perhaps the hospital services aren't critical at Bon Secours. I don't know. But it could. One of the sources that I saw said that it has some 330 money.
What is 330 money again?
Community health center money. So if it's willing to change its identity into a community health center instead of a hospital, it might be more valuable to its community and might be able to maintain many of the critical services that it's providing.
Is that possible, Dr. Samuel Ross?
No, it's possible, and it's not, and you know, it's not a foreign or unrealistic concept. The question is, how do we bridge from where we are to that kind of a model? We can't leave people out in the cold.
Right.
I mean, And I know that's a big problem with the homeless. We do that. But there are another set of people who are, you know, near homeless, certainly living in poverty levels, that there is not a solution for. So to abruptly go from what we're doing to what Alan is talking about is not in the best interest of the people or the system. How do we build that bridge? And it's a multi-year bridge.
It sounds to me like you need friends in order to build that bridge.
You're right.
And as I ask these questions this afternoon, I'm not sure that you have them. People are not willing to go to University of Maryland for the services that you provide. And that's, to me, the most logical friend geographically.
Right, but that is the conversation that we and I think this group is certainly a part of it, and what we're talking about for our own organization, that is a community engagement discussion, roundtable, whatever name you want to put on it, that we need to begin to have and hold each other accountable for getting there.
Jeff?
And the city has a role there, too, the city health department, for example, to help convene this group and bring the members of the community, the neighborhood associations, and there are some I know in your neighborhood. I was the Department of Social Services neighborhood outreach worker to the Bonsecker neighborhoods, my first job out of graduate school in 1973. And unfortunately, the Department of Social Services doesn't have neighborhood outreach workers anymore and hasn't had them for two decades. And this is part of the problem that Dr. Noonan identified earlier, is there are pieces to this system, but it's not really a system, and not everything that it needs is there.
So is it impossible in the city or the state to redesign a system that works? I mean, can it work even, with all due respect, can it work at Bonsecour, being part of a larger chain of hospitals that might not be interested in that kind of model?
It can work. Let me read a statement quickly. This is from an article called The Triple Aim, Care, Health, and Cost. And it's from a health affairs article. And it says, the superiority of the possible end state is no longer scientifically debatable. The pain of the transition state, the disruption of institutions, forms, habits, beliefs, and income streams in the status quo, is what denies us so far the enormous gains on components of the triple aim that integrated care could offer. It is possible. You know, it is possible. We have to have the will to continue doing what we're talking about.
Alan?
It's possible, and I've lived through it I'm embarrassed that Mr. Singer is the one who brought up the role of the local health department. But I've been in the local health department where we really did transform a system, but it was painful. And it took myself working on the inside and the community people working on the outside, knowing what we're trying to do, working towards the same goal. And eventually we got there. But it was tough, and it was also political.
And where did you get to? I'm curious.
We built a perinatal care system in a city where...
And perinatal meaning?
Prenatal care, delivery, and postpartum in a city that was doing a horrible job.
So it looks like... Yes. And so it really is interesting here. I'm curious about... I think what we have to explore in coming moments is moving on to finding out how you create a hospital system that works. Maybe we reconvene with our Secretary of Health and some others who actually manage those rules and regulations in the state and see how that works. I mean, it seems to me that's critical for primary medical care services to be in our cities, along with mental health care services and others we're talking about. And we'll figure out how all that works. I think that's maybe something that happens in this conversation that takes place in Washington, D.C. Now as we kind of reconfigure our medical health care system with the new President Barack Obama. We'll see. I want to thank Jeff Singer, Executive Director of Healthcare for the Homeless, Dr. Alan Noonan, Dean of the Morgan State University School of Public Health and Policy, and Dr. Samuel Ross, CEO of Bonsecour Hospital in Baltimore, for joining us all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll remind you all, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This April, Urbanite shows its colors with the green issue, offering a comprehensive guide to eco-friendly living and taking a close look at the area's green collar economy. Available in print at over 800 locations and online at www.urbanitebaltimore.com. And listen up for the Urbanite radio stories here on The Mark Steiner Show. When we return, we'll be talking to Wangari Maathai, who is the first African woman ever to be awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. Her new book is The Challenge for Africa. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Stay with us for that, and then later with Dr. Peter Weibrow. So don't go away. We're back in not long, right after the top of the hour.